It's time for the March 8, 2024 edition of Weekly Signals Weekly Review, a personal recollection of the last 168 hours of history, broadcasting on Middle Name Pride Day from the University of California at Irvine on KUCI 88.9 FM. I'm Nathan Callahan.
And I'm Mike Caspar.
And as always, a sassy pup whose middle name is Deepfake News Dog, Mahler, the Deepfake News Dog. Oh, Mahler. He's had a tough day already. Yeah? They did what? They unplugged the RCA cord?
Oh, no.
Jesus. That would have been a piece of information we could have used, I don't know, before the show started.
Yeah.
Mahler. He's a funny guy. Right.
Today we'll be talking about de-extinction, junk fees, high wealth tax cheats, alarm fatigue, loud fish, and so much more. But first, did you ever feel like your brain was filled with waste, Mike?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. Do you ever just want to just get rid of that
waste?
Just
wipe it clean.
Flush it out.
Yeah. There's, How about you?
Nah. From Sci-Fi News, according to new research, brainwaves help flush waste out of your brain while you sleep. Individual neurons coordinate to produce rhythmic waves that propel fluid through dense brain tissue, washing the tissue in the process. The accumulation of metabolic waste is a leading cause of lots of neurological disorders, but we only have limited knowledge of how the brain self-cleanses. Now researchers say these synchronized neurons act like miniature pumps that power fluid flow, which in turn remove debris from the brain. If we can build on this process, there is a possibility of delaying or even preventing neurological diseases, including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, in which things like metabolic waste and junk proteins accumulate in the brain and lead to neurodegeneration.
Okay.
Brain cells orchestrate thoughts, if you're lucky, feeling and body movements, and form dynamic networks essential to memory formation and problem solving. But to perform such energy-demanding tasks, brain cells require fuel. Their consumption of nutrients from the diet crashes, creates metabolic waste in the process, and it's critical the brain disposes of this waste. If we enhance this cleansing process, we may even be able to sleep less and stay healthy. Sleep less, stay healthy.
Wouldn't that be great to
flush your brain?
Yeah, get a 20-hour day and be normal. Sleep your 4 hours and get back at it.
I'd be willing to give that a try if they had some sort of special brain waste flushing pill.
Pill.
It's always a pill.
There's always a pill. And honestly, I mean, I don't know what I would do with the extra 4 hours we're talking about, possibly 3 or 4 hours of day. I don't write that novel.
That's why I don't like you.
I write
that novel. You don't know what you do with an extra 4 hours. Well, then don't take it. Well, give them to me. From MedicineNet, for some, even a trace of allergen on a fork or spoon can trigger a life-threatening reaction. Now the drug omalizumab. You think I'm mispronouncing that? I do too, but that's what it said. Ozolizumab.
Okay, what does it do?
First of all, it's developed by a company, Genentech, as an asthma treatment.
Okay, gotcha.
And sold under the name of Xolair. But now it's been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as an injectable treatment for certain food allergies.
Oh, okay.
In other words, it's two drugs in one. The study showed that the monoclonal antibody treatment quelled allergic reactions in around two-thirds of people with allergies to foods that includes peanuts, milk, and eggs. So those are a lot of people have that kind of allergy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the results suggest Xolair won't completely rid people of their allergies or make it safe for them to pig out on those foods, but it could provide an important safety net in case of accidental consumption or exposure.
Okay.
So you keep a syringe around.
Yeah, you're walking around.
Filled with ozolizumab.
Yeah.
And in case you're allergic to something, you get that reaction, you just jab it in.
Yeah. Somebody walking down the street tackles you and stuffs a bunch of Planters peanuts in your mouth, and then you're just
you have to advertise for Planters.
Well, they're the first. Okay.
Yeah. It's not. Yes, this is. Don't plug. People know what peanuts are without advertising for that ridiculous man with a monocle. By the way, did you know that heroin was the brand name for the Bear Company?
No, back, I did not know that.
Yeah.
They were.
It was heroin. They just cut the E off of heroin, the female hero, because they believed that heroin gave you comfort. And saved you from a miserable life.
So this was Bayer that did this?
Yeah, Bayer Aspirin people. But that's way back. This is like in the 1800s.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Nevertheless.
They went on to even more infamous things.
Yeah, there is a connection here.
Okay.
I just don't know what it is. If you're allergic to peanuts or milk or eggs, may I recommend a donation at KUCI because, well, why the heck not? Just go to KUCI.org. Your generous donation is how we stay on air. Commercial-free, free-form, free-speech radio, KUCI 88.9 FM. From Live Science. A company formed to bring extinct animals back from the dead said it's taken a giant leap toward genetically resurrecting the woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
We'll be having woolly mammoth running around the university pretty soon, I think. This is in Dallas. They got it going on in Dallas,
yeah.
which is real close to where woolly mammoths lived, of course.
Oh, yeah.
In the Arctic.
You can't think about Dallas and not have that image come into your brain as a woolly mammoth.
Colossal Biosciences, that's what they named themselves, okay. A biotechnology company based in Dallas, announced it has produced a line of Asian elephant stem cells that can be engineered into other types of cells needed to reconstruct a woolly mammoth, or at least a mammoth wannabe designed to thrive in the cold. Proponents say breakthroughs in this field may yield benefits for animals still with us, including endangered elephants. So that's a good deal. Mm-hmm. But how hard will de-extinction be on animals themselves?
Yeah.
On these animals we've created?
Yeah.
And more profoundly, how will an engineered mammoth learn how to behave like a mammoth? Most of the mammals and birds that are being considered for de-extinction have complex social and cultural interactions that have been lost. They're simply not genes. So this woolly mammoth is, you know, waking up.
Yeah.
He's looking around.
Yeah.
No other woolly mammoths.
Yeah.
He's kind of lonely.
Yeah.
Then there's the philosophical question, is a bioengineered mammoth truly a mammoth? Or is it a furrier elephant that can tolerate the cold?
I don't know if you're going to get to this part of the story, but Stuart Brand, one of the people who founded the Whole Earth Catalog, has devoted a good part of the tail end of his life to essentially this. Now, his idea was to go to Siberia and engineer the woolly mammoth into an environment from which they were known to have existed.
Well, there's no saying that these people won't do that.
Yeah.
They just happen to be in Dallas right now. They can't take a plane. Colossus said they've produced the stem cells they need by suppressing anti-cancer genes and bathing the cells in the right chemical cocktail. Mm-hmm. The company published a preprint that is not yet peer-reviewed, and that's the thing that I'm kind of curious about. And that's the great thing about science.
Yeah.
You have something like this. We're reading a story about it. At least we know we can't take it too seriously until other scientists grab hold of it and review it and can dot all the T's and cross all the I's.
Yeah, that stuff. Yeah. And that is absolutely true. What we do know about science as opposed to Republicans is these things are peer-reviewed. They actually do hard science, and they try to figure out what are the advantages, disadvantages, what are the possible ramifications. And by the way, if along the way they feel like, oh, we made a mistake, they're willing to talk about it out loud. They're willing to say, we made a mistake, and let's go back and see if we can do it better next time.
Republicans who generally just run around and trip over their own genitals. From Science Daily, an orca. Mm-hmm. Or killer whale, has been observed for the first time ever individually, on its own, consuming a giant white shark.
I heard about this.
Within 2 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in 2 minutes. It takes me at least five to get through a great white shark.
And it's got to have some, sliced almonds.
A little bit of lemon.
A little bit of lemon, absolutely.
The quick snack occurred off the coast of Mossel Bay, South Africa. Orcas are generally known to work together to catch large prey like sea lions, seals, and even other whales, and of course sharks. By hunting together, they can surround prey and use their combined intelligence and strength to attack.
Yeah.
They can hunt large animals individually. However, this is the first time it's gobbled up one of the world's largest predators, the great white shark. Insights into the predatory behavior like this enhances our knowledge of marine ecosystems and predator-prey relationships. Scientists are increasingly concerned about the coastal marine ecology balance. The presence of these shark-hunting killer whales possibly ties into broader ecosystem impacts. From Yale Environment 360, this winter, 90% of Mongolia has been at risk from a deadly combination of extreme cold, heavy snow, and high winds, a phenomena known as DZUD.
DZUD?
Yeah, D-Z-U-D.
Okay.
It's my new favorite word.
DZUD.
DZUD.
Wow.
DZUDs used to occur in this Central Asian nation about once every decade. You wait 10 years, a DZUD come along. But there have been six in the past 10 years. That's a lot.
Wow.
Once again, it's climate change. Mongolians who depend on their animals for food, fuel, and income are now experiencing their second consecutive winter with a severe DZUD.
God.
When a DZUD strikes, it's not a question of whether there will be death, but how many will die, people as well as animals. As of the last week of February, the number of dead animals reached more than 2.1 million.
Oh, my God.
Dead animals, rising from 600,000 just 2 weeks earlier.
Oh, my God.
Snowstorms have killed at least 9 people, including one child. Meanwhile, from the New York Times, a committee of 18 scholars has, by a large majority, voted down a proposal to declare the start of the Anthropocene, a proposed geological epoch dating from the commencement of significant human impact on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know about this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been doing things.
Yeah, we have had a dramatic impact on Earth.
And they voted on this.
Yes.
Coming after nearly 15 years of deliberation, the scholars said humankind has left too many different kinds of imprints on nature over too broad a stretch of time to be captured neatly by a single starting point, which is what, according to the rules, geological timekeeping requires, so no Anthropocene.
Okay. Well, the big question is, does it matter whether or not we name it?
Well.
Or does it matter if we name it?
The decision to nix the Anthropocene has nothing to do with the evidence that people are changing the planet. That evidence keeps growing. But under the rules of stratigraphy, a branch of geology concerned with the study of rock layers and layering, each interval of Earth time needs a clear, objective starting point, one that applies worldwide. So we're stuck with old rules, sounds like.
Okay.
And I say, just change the rules.
Yeah.
You're saying, do people need it? I think they do. The word Anthropocene, by the way, is derived from the Greek words anthropo for human and scene for new. So we have a new human epoch.
Yeah.
We're entering a new age where we humans are dramatically affecting the composition of the strata with nuclear fallout, earth-moving projects, fossil fuels, and plastics. People need to understand that the change is interconnected.
Yes.
Meanwhile, while the world heats up, scientists are making originalist rulings that are as arcane as the U.S. Supreme Court.
There you go. There you go.
From the Boston Globe, a new satellite mission spearheaded by the Environmental Defense Fund to help scientists spy on global methane emissions from the oil and gas industry was launched. We got a new satellite up there, and it could help policymakers crack down on major sources of the potent greenhouse gas, methane. The new satellite named MethaneSat.
Okay.
They really got original with that one. Will provide important insights as global temperatures rise. Methane has a shorter lifetime in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, but it's far more potent as a greenhouse gas. Studies estimate that methane emissions may account for as much as 30% of the planet's warming. And from the Associated Press, across the U.S., trillions of gallons of drinking water are lost every year, especially from decrepit systems in communities struggling with significant population loss and industrial decline that leave behind poorer residents, vacant neighborhoods, and too large water systems that are difficult to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Many communities, especially older industrial and rural areas in the eastern half of the country, are facing an economic and public health reckoning after decades of deferred maintenance and disinvestment. Yeah, like government's a problem, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is exactly how this reads out. You can probably trace this back to funds that were cut by Republican administrations in the past.
That's right. And how about the economic devastation that was done by, I don't know, the deindustrialization of certain parts of the country? All kinds of factors have come into play, shipping our jobs overseas, et cetera, et cetera.
In the Detroit enclave of Highland Park, where the population halved in the past 20 years and is 83% smaller than its 1930s heyday, an estimated 70% of the water is lost from pipes up to 120 years old. Several Chicago suburbs likely are losing more than 40% of water, and some Georgia systems are losing more than 80% of their treated drinking water. It's a huge problem because the infrastructure is rapidly deteriorating, and the Biden administration, Environmental Protection Agency, has established a technical assistance program to help. They're moving on it right now.
And by the way, the Biden administration did pass a significant infrastructure bill, but a lot of the money that they wanted to see put back into our infrastructure was blocked by, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Yeah. That was a huge loss for all of us when that happened. And absolutely, infrastructure. By the way, I always say this, I'm going to say it again. Infrastructure equals jobs, equals economic opportunity.
You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM, Irvine, California. Visit us on the web at kuci.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/KUCI88.9, on our Tumblr blog at kuciradio.tumblr.com, and on Twitter and Instagram at KUCIFM. From Fox Business News, federal regulators finalize a rule to cap most credit card late fees at $8 as part of a broader push by the Biden administration to eliminate junk fees. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau estimates the new regulation, first proposed in February of 2023, will save families more than $10 billion a year by cutting fees from an average of $32. So from $32 to $8. The new rule applies to large credit card issuers, those with more than 1 million accounts. These companies represent more than 95% of total outstanding credit card debt. The new push to target credit card fees comes as the White House is helping families hurting from the high cost of living. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau also proposed a rule in January that would curb excessive overdraft fees. It's simply unfair to impose a steep late fee penalty that far exceeds the credit card company's costs, especially when someone is just a few hours or a couple of days late making their payment, Chuck Bell, advocacy program director at Consumer Reports, said. He described the new rule as reasonable and a way to make a real difference. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts, cheered the move. These junk fees are designed to boost Wall Street profits at the expense of working people, Warren said. This is government working for the people, not the big banks.
I believe that the Obama administration had those regulations in place until Donald Trump became president, and then they took these things off. Plus, they essentially eviscerated the power of this Consumer Bureau that Obama and his administration had put into place, and they've just basically gutted it.
Yeah.
So they don't have any real power. But this is a good idea. Great.
From United Press International, the IRS plans to go after 125,000 high-income earners who did not file tax returns going back to 2017. And the agency says hundreds of millions of dollars of unpaid taxes are involved in these cases. Beginning this week, the IRS will be sending out noncompliance letters to more than 25,000 people who earned more than $1 million per year and 100,000 people with incomes between $400,000 and $1 million who failed to pay their taxes between 2017 and 2021. The campaign is part of the agency's ongoing effort to pursue high wealth tax cheats, mandated in part by funding provided through the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act, passed into law in 2022, and a directive from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen to IRS leadership not to increase audit rates on people making less than $400,000 a year annually. So this is good again.
Yeah.
It's good money invested when we invest some of it in the IRS to go after people who aren't paying their taxes.
Yeah. And that has been the absolute obsession on the part of the Republicans to make sure that never happens. Remember, part of the negotiations over the government shutdown and to continue to fund the government, their big deal was to stop hiring any more IRS agents and to try to take all that money back from what Biden had allocated.
From the Associated Press, Alan Weisselberg, the former chief financial officer of Donald Trump's company, the Trump Organization, pleaded guilty to lying under oath during his testimony in the ex-president's New York civil fraud case. His plea deal will send him back to jail, but does not require that he testify at Trump's hush money criminal trial. Weisselberg, 76, that's his age, that's not his brand, Weisselberg pleaded guilty in state court in Manhattan to two counts of perjury and will be sentenced in April to 5 months in jail. This will be his second stint behind bars after serving 100 days last year for dodging taxes on company perks. And in pleading guilty, Weisselberg found himself caught between the law and his loyalty to Trump, whose family employed him for nearly 50 years, sending him into retirement with a $2 million severance, and has continued to pay his legal bills.
Yep.
His plea to perjury is further evidence, and rather than testify truthfully in a way that might harm his old boss, he is willing again to spend a chunk of his golden years in jail by lying. From our good friend Michael Hiltzik at Los Angeles Times. Last weekend, Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. both associated themselves with policies that would bring vaccine-preventable diseases like polio back to the U.S. That's good.
The good old days.
Make America have polio again. We've already seen that the embrace of anti-vaccination crap by crooked politicians and Floridian government officials has had impacts on public health. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is now reporting 41 cases of measles for which a vaccine has been available since 1963. Meanwhile, at a campaign rally in Richmond, Virginia on February 2nd, Trump said this, referring to the policy he would implement as president. I will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate or mask mandate. Currently, Virginia requires children attending schools to be vaccinated against 15 diseases, with boosters where appropriate. Meanwhile, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vaccine hogwash so bristles with disinformation and pseudoscience that it's been disavowed by virtually his entire family. Yeah. Children's Health Defense, the anti-vaccine organization Kennedy founded and chairs, claimed that polio isn't caused by a virus and that the polio vaccine doesn't work.
I'm sorry.
That's just sad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I really feel bad for the Kennedy family. Robert Kennedy Jr. needs help. And Cheryl Hines, please, it's time for an intervention.
Polio became a massive threat to public health in the 1940s and 1950s, with a per capita infection rate in the U.S. that reached 87.2 per 100,000 population in 1952, sending tens of thousands of children to the hospital and killing a half million people per year worldwide. In modern times, polio cases have all but disappeared thanks to vaccination. It's really hard even to read this. This is disgusting. This is repugnant.
Yeah.
The man should just be put away. Yeah. He has no business trying to lead the country. Where is he going to lead us? To disease.
Yeah.
The same phenomena occurred with measles. In 1958, the U.S. saw 763 cases and 552 deaths. By 1968, a few years after the vaccine became available, there were 22,231 cases compared to 763,000 and 24 deaths compared to 552 before. Thanks to immunization mandates, even the most recent spike in cases triggered by an unvaccinated visitor to Disneyland in 2019 reached only 1,200 cases. Thanks to vaccines, smallpox has been eradicated from the face of the earth. No one in developed countries has had reason to fear measles, whooping cough, diphtheria, or polio for decades. Yeah. Measles has been reduced in public estimation to a nuisance fever. The truth is that vaccines are a victim of their own success. When vaccines work, nothing happens. Except apparently Robert F. Kennedy Jr. finds a way to get himself noticed. Trump and Kennedy are playing with fire, and it's American families and their children who will be burned. That's Robert Hiltzik at the LA Times.
We have to be rigorous. We're giving medications to our children. We have to make sure that these things are safe, and the good that will come from them far outweighs any possible side effects that could be harmful to these kids. But we've done that. It's been done. And if there was something seriously wrong over this many years of doing this, of vaccinating our children, we would know something.
From Scientific American, a new kind of rocket engine is a hot area of development at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration and other government, private, and academic research labs, the Rotating Detonation Engine, or RDE, uses a new kind of combustion. In a standard piston engine, fuel ignites and explodes as pistons pump and compress fuel. A rotating detonation engine pumps fuel around a ring-shaped channel to create a steady, supersonic wavefront of detonations, which produce continuous thrust. It can capture more of a fuel's energy to power vehicles farther, faster, and with larger payloads. The technology could propel high-speed and hypersonic aircraft, as well as deep space transports and lunar and Martian landers. Someday, it might even power supersonic transports for the commercial airline industry. When fuel ignites in a rotating detonation engine, it doesn't burn so much as it bangs, consumed more completely and nearly instantaneously via intense compression and heating by a supersonic shockwave. Simply put, rather than burning fuel like existing power plants, a rotating detonation engine explodes it to produce more thrust.
Huh.
So we're going to get more bang for our buck, I guess.
Okay. Well, that's science.
From Nature magazine, a study of more than 7 million digital publications shows that more than one quarter of scholarly articles are not being properly archived and preserved.
Oh, no.
The findings published in the Journal of Librarianship and Scholarly Communication indicate that systems to preserve papers online have failed to keep pace with the growth of research output. Our entire epistemology of science and research relies on the chain of footnotes, explains Martin Eve, a researcher in literature, technology, and publishing at Birkbeck University in London. If you can't verify what someone else has said at some other point, you're just trusting to blind faith for artifacts that are no longer read yourself.
Wow.
So what are we going to do about that?
I don't know. AI.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That might be a good use for AI.
Yeah, there are some excellent jobs that AI can do that would just take human beings far too long to be able to accomplish, and I see that as a good thing.
From Scientific American, beeping alarms in hospitals are a life or death matter, but with so many going off all the time, medical professionals can experience alarm fatigue that impairs care. I know I experience alarm fatigue.
Every Friday morning at 8 o'clock. Go ahead.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
But if I've ever been in a hospital where they're tracking me and you're hearing this beep all the time, here's the deal. I think they're measuring my heartbeat and stuff, right? That's the beep I'm hearing. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you think.
Yeah. Well, if I have a heart attack, I'm going to know about it. Yeah, I don't need a beep to tell me. It's not like I'm walking around in real life with a beep. I wish they could figure out some way that they wouldn't be beeping in my room. Because it makes me think I'm in a hospital, which isn't like the most comforting thing. You know what I'm saying?
No, you're in a hospital.
Yeah. I could be laying there subconsciously thinking I'm at the ocean, relaxing, like they always tell you to do.
Just relax.
Yeah, just relax. Then it's beep, beep,
And beep, yes, beep, I think I got beep, it. I think I got beep. It. But, you know, there are certain things about a hospital that I know are good for you. It's a good idea to be in a hospital for certain things, for sure. Absolutely.
I'm not anti-hospital.
No, I'm not either.
I'm anti this monotonous beeping that goes
but
on.
Walking into a hospital never gives me a good feeling. Very rarely.
That's fascinating, Mike.
Now, I'm just saying, you go in there, and the psychology of illness kind of imbues your, it infuses your body.
Well, meanwhile, alarm fatigue.
Yeah.
Auditory alarms can sound up to 300 times a day per patient in U.S. hospitals, but only a small fraction require immediate attention.
Yeah.
Data from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration suggests that alarm fatigue and other alarm-related issues were linked to 566 deaths over 5.5 years. But researchers now report that changing an alarm's sound to incorporate properties of musical instruments can be helpful to avoid alarm fatigue. Sounds with a percussive timbre, many of which contain short bursts of high-frequency energy, stand out at even low volume. Mm-hmm. In contrast, loud flat tones that lack high-frequency components, like a beeping truck in reverse, gets lost. The sounds that made alarm sequences least annoying, with no decrease in recall, were percussive and had complex time-varied harmonic overtones, like a triangle or a xylophone's ping, rather than a monotonous mechanical beep. Hopefully the findings will lead to alarms that live up to their name and command attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Play a little, how about some vibes? Joel Ross. From Smithsonian. Transparent and just a half inch long, a male Danionella. Fish. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I had me worried there for a second. Transparent and half an inch long, a male Danionella fish can make noises of more than 140 decibels. That puts it in the same range as a firecracker.
Okay.
The unusual fish that lives in Myanmar doesn't have a skull.
Or a skill.
Yeah. Well, it has a skill. It can make these sounds.
Okay.
But it doesn't have a skull, so the researchers can easily see and access its tissue. Analyzing footage, they saw that the fish were making the sounds with their swim bladders. A special muscle pulls one of the fish's ribs against a piece of cartilage with an indentation. Then, when the fish releases the rib, it collides with the swim bladder to make a loud drumming noise at 140 decibels.
Whoa!
A trumpeting elephant can reach only 125 decibels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is
140.
Yeah, 140 for this little half-inch-long male Danionella. Though the team figured out how the tiny fish makes so much noise, they still don't know why they do it.
Oh, wow.
It's possible the fish are making sounds to find each other in murky waters, or maybe because only males do it, it's meant to attract a mate or warn the other males to steer clear.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's a lot.
And from The Guardian, a hyper-vaccinated man voluntarily received 217 COVID vaccine shots in a 29-month period.
What? Say that again. 20?
They call him a hyper-vaccinated. That's a fun word they made up there. But he received 217 COVID vaccine shots in a 29-month period.
Wow.
So he's getting a lot of them. He was selling like his certificate of I got the shot to people so they could cheat.
Okay.
But nevertheless, he's shown no signs of ever having COVID and has suffered no side effects from the vaccinations. So going back to our vaccination story.
Yeah.
The researchers found that his immune system also was fully functional.
Yeah.
So that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for the idiots who live in MAGA world, the only takeaway from the story is that the hyper-vaccinated man now has 217 Bill Gates tracking microchips in him. And finally, from Yahoo.com, an Elon Musk Tesla Cybertruck. You ever seen one of those?
I saw one this last week for the first time.
Yeah, they're ugly.
It is hideous.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to be impressed.
Yeah.
This is just look like something I would have built when I was a preteen.
Yeah.
Like a 12-year-old out of boxes.
Yeah.
And painted it with silver paint and
I knew immediately what it was, but it was like it doesn't even look functional. It doesn't look there's nothing even proletarian utility vibe. Exactly. It just looks stupid.
Yeah. An Elon Musk Tesla Cybertruck crashed into the Beverly Hills hotel sign.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's like the perfect symbol for something. Yeah. I don't know exactly what. There were no injuries, and the signage was unharmed. Oh, well. But unfortunately, a prankster decided to joke that one of the hotel's valets had been driving the Cybertruck when it crashed.
Sure.
Elon Musk responded to this rumor, saying that the valet must have been caught off guard by the Tesla's Cybertruck's raw power.
Oh, my God.
Sounds like Elon there.
It does sound like it.
But unfortunately for Elon, the driver was actually the owner of the boxy Cybertruck.
You can subscribe to the Weekly Signals Weekly Review podcast at weeklysignals.com. Weeklysignals.com. Subscribe now.